This episode is brought to you by Hired.com. Searching for a new job can feel stressful, scary, and time-consuming. Pushy recruiters try to sell you on roles that you don't actually want. And job boards make you feel like you're throwing your resume into a black hole, never to be seen again. Sometimes you go all the way through an interview process just to find out at the very end that the salary offer or company culture doesn't match what you're looking for. Hired is the world's most intelligent talent matching platform for full-time and contract opportunities in engineering, development, design, product management, data science, sales, and marketing. We make your job search faster, focused, and stress-free. Instead of endlessly applying to companies and hoping for the best, Hired puts you in control of when and how you connect with compelling new opportunities. After completing one simple application, top employers apply to hire you. On Hired, you receive personalized interview requests and upfront salary information so you can make informed decisions about which opportunities to pursue over a condensed timeline. Throughout the process, your dedicated talent advocate will have your back, providing unbiased career coaching to help you put your best foot forward with potential employers. Hired offers access to 4,000 plus innovative employers, including big brands such as Facebook and smaller emerging startups. The size and type of company you want to connect with is totally up to you. We help people find new opportunities in 17 major cities in North America, Europe, Asia, and Australia. Open to relocation? Let us know. Your privacy and autonomy in your job search is of utmost importance to us. That's why Hired hides your profile from your current and past employers. The best part is it's always free for you to find your next job on Hired, no exceptions. We pay you to get hired. Today's listeners can earn double our normal $1,000 hiring bonus by signing up with the show's link. That's right, earn $2,000 for finding your next chapter on Hired. Visit hired.com/reactnativeradio to learn more. This episode is brought to you by DailyDrip.com. DailyDrip makes keeping up to date on programming skills easier. You already know how much time it takes to find good resources and learn new languages. What if the hard part of that was already done for you? Sign up for DailyDrip and pick a topic that you want to learn about. Want to learn React Native? How about Elm? Maybe you want to brush up on your CSS and HTML. Every weekday, you'll get a short video or reading delivered to you via email. The best part is it only takes 5 minutes a day. We have a special coupon code just for React Native Radio listeners. If you sign up using the coupon code RNRADIO, all one word, you'll save $9 on your first month, which means you can try out the React Native topic for free. Don't forget to use the coupon code RNRADIO to show support for our podcast. Make learning part of your daily routine with DailyDrip.com. Hello and welcome to episode 51 of React Native Radio. Today on our panel, we have Ali Najafizadeh.
Hello, guys.
Kevin Old.
Hello, friends.
Peter Pykarchik.
Hey, everybody.
And I'm the host, Nader Dabit. So our special guest today is Devin Abbott. Welcome back to the show, Devin.
Thanks, Nader. Glad to be back.
So what have you been up to since the last time we talked to you?
So I've been working on a bunch of different things, both in React, React Native, and mobile development in general. I've been working on something a little like Interface Builder for React Native. I've been working on a way to share iOS apps much more easily. I've been working on sort of a sandbox for example documentation, like what I did on React Native Express. And I've been working on a new styling library for React and React Native.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll have to touch on all of those things. I know I've been seeing React Native Express, and I've been playing around with it, and I've been trying to send everyone there because it's such an awesome tool. What kind of made you want to write React Native Express?
Great question. So this was already back in March, I think, when I started it. And Deco had basically just launched Deco, the IDE I made for React Native. And one of the things I found was that it was really hard to find a great resource to send people to get started. The official docs are pretty good, but there's just a lot sort of missing. Like, you know, once you sort of have the hang of basic React Native components, how do you go about hooking in data and doing networking and all these things that are sort of outside of the scope of the React Native docs? Like, you should probably use Redux, but the official docs shouldn't go into Redux. They should stick to React Native. So I thought, what if there was a place for like all of this extra stuff that you really need to know as a React Native developer, but that sort of is beyond the scope of core React Native?
So when you went about building it, it looks like you have the, well, I guess before we kind of go too much into it, can you kind of give everyone an overview of exactly what it does and who it's built, I guess, help? I know you kind of were saying that you were trying to find a way to kind of get new people into React Native and have a place to go. But can you kind of talk about who the best, I guess, users would be for React Native Express?
Sure. I think the best user is someone coming from web development and wanting to get started in React Native. And I say that because there are a bunch of places where I make analogies to like how web development works, divs and spans and HTML elements. I assume you already have a pretty good understanding of old JavaScript or ES5 JavaScript. And I teach some new stuff like the ES6, ES7, JSX stuff to like catch you up if maybe you don't know that. But it certainly isn't for like beginners to programming and probably not for people who aren't sort of pretty experienced in JavaScript already.
So what were some of the technical challenges you came across while you were building that?
The most interesting part of this project was definitely emulating a React Native environment in the web browser and being able to live edit the code as part of sort of the tutorials and examples. And I use React Native Web, the project from, I hope I say his name right, Nicholas Gallagher from Twitter. And that does a great job of getting you pretty close to like a fully functioning React Native environment. And then all I had to do from there was sort of hook up this complicated iframe system where you have a CodeMirror editor in one side. And as you type, I transpile through Babel in a web worker and then sort of send that into an iframe that actually runs your code.
So does React Native Web kind of handle the styling for you? So if you style it for, I guess, for a React Native iOS or Android project, it'll actually compile correctly for the web or something like that?
Pretty much. They're one-to-one. It's definitely not perfect, and you'll run into some quirks like, I don't know, text inputs, for example. A lot of style properties just don't work on text inputs in React Native, but in React Native Web, of course, since it's just touching the DOM, it's sort of what you would expect.
Yeah, I'm playing around with it now. I'm having a lot of fun on the example for the set timeout. Actually, it's a set interval where you have like the four different colors and the four different numbers. So that's pretty cool.
Hey, Devin, so I'm taking a look at some of the examples. Is it possible for people to download and try out some of these examples as well? And is it possible for them to contribute back and help you make this better?
Yes. So to the first question, can you download them? Right now, I don't have like a built-in download button, but they do tend to mostly be one JavaScript file, so you can just copy and paste it, which isn't great, but not terrible either. And then everything here is open source. So the project React Native Express is on my GitHub. And then there's a separate project called React Native Web Player that's just the sandbox that you can embed in your site.
Oh, wow, that's cool. So you can actually embed stuff from React Native Express onto your own site. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yeah, basically the web player thing I use that has the phone and the React Native environment and the editor and the live coding, you can embed just that iframe and load in any code you want.
Oh, that's so cool. Is there anything else that you'd want to add to React Native Express in the future, or do you consider this guide like more or less finished?
I think there are still a couple big missing parts. The biggest one is navigation. It's sort of a hairy topic right now, so I didn't even touch it. I just don't talk about navigation for the most part. There are other things like testing that would be great to cover. And then I want to add more example projects and exercises. Because React Native changes so much, there's still a lot of updating work that needs to be done. So it'll probably never sort of be done. I'll always be working on it.
Speaking of navigation, let's talk about the new navigation action that's kind of going on within the React Native project itself. So apparently they are going to be moving to a newer API and they're going to be getting rid of Navigator and Navigator Experimental and possibly Navigator iOS. I'm not really sure 100% about Navigator iOS, but can you kind of talk about what you know about what's going on with that? Because as far as I know, it's going to be like a hybrid of X Navigation and maybe small ideas that came out of Navigation Experimental. but it's going to be some type of API that's going to be able to be used across both web and mobile. But that's about as far as much as I know.
You summarized it pretty well. That's the idea. There's a new navigation library, a new JavaScript-based navigation library. So we're still waiting on something native from Leland Richardson. But the JavaScript-based one is called React Navigation. It's a separate repo altogether. And the idea is that it can be used for both React and React Native. And it's really more of like an agreed-upon API, in a way, than an implementation. It's like, this is how you should make a navigation API if you want to be able to use any kind of views with any kind of transitions with a lot of flexible router parameters that are all statically analyzable.
So is the repo available for us to kind of check out now that you know of?
I'm pretty sure it's still private and it's on one of the React.js orgs.
Any idea when they may be releasing this?
The roadmap says January, so I'll say January.
Oh, okay, cool.
But, you know, don't quote me on that.
Maybe by the time this episode is out, it'll be out. Who knows?
Well, but well, they were careful not to put what year, right? So they just say January, and so they're always right. So I don't know.
So what is the company that you're working with, Deco Software? What have you guys been doing as a company, and how is the IDE coming along, and how has the reception been with the IDE?
Okay, we've been doing a bunch of different things, probably too many things. I'll start with the IDE. The reception was very good in terms of people enjoying using it and finding it cool and experimental. I think it has a bunch of basically fundamental problems in the sense that probably we don't really want to introduce a new IDE into the ecosystem. And so probably we should take the things that people like most and port them to Atom or VS Code or any editor, really, and live on in that form. Because maintaining a whole IDE is a ton of work.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
So if we do end up releasing something like Interface Builder for React Native, it'll be part of what we'll call Deco. But Deco will probably be part of, to begin with, Atom.
So I guess Interface Builder for React Native would be kind of like, can you kind of describe what you're aiming for exactly there?
Yeah, it's all still pretty experimental and we're figuring it out. So I won't promise a specific product or date. But the idea is, what if you could drag and drop components into, say, scenes in a storyboard? You've got storyboards, you've got scenes, and you've got components. And you can manipulate each prop of a component through a visual editor, or at the very least, drop downs and color pickers and that sort of thing. You can rearrange components in a tree hierarchy. You can create transitions from scene to scene by hooking up function props of components to sort of built in or customizable but sort of specific transition actions. And the idea here is that we want to make it really easy for teams that may even have designers working on components to work together. So it'd be amazing if you were working on a team and suddenly the code became the source of truth, because everyone is able to work on components and fit them together into scenes using the same tool.
So how did that come about? Was it maybe a disconnect from iOS builders that longed to have an interface builder back when they're doing, you know, mobile development? Or is there something else that led to you guys trying to experiment with it?
I think it happened right after we launched the IDE, and a bunch of companies reached out to us saying things along the lines of they want to take their component library or even their style guide and import it into Deco and use that to have their designers prototype new apps.
Got it.
And
okay.
So that got us thinking, well, we're actually pretty close to that. What if we sort of ran with this and made a tool that could bridge the gap between engineers and designers who are making stuff with components?
Awesome. Yeah. So it seems to be more designer driven rather than just trying to scratch an itch for like an old iOS developer that is attached to Interface Builder in Xcode, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. It's awesome.
As a concept, Interface Builder in Xcode, I think, is a great idea. I mean, there are a lot of things that make sense to build visually. So even if it weren't for helping designers, I think a lot of developers would find that useful.
Certainly. Yeah. I was just wondering what the motivation was behind it. And I think that having like true designers to be involved like in their space and the developer in their space, you know, I think it just, you're probably finding this, it makes this really collaborative environment where everyone has their tool of choice in their wheelhouse, and then they're able to work with it and give a piece back and contribute and iterate. So that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that has been most difficult, I think, is that React Native, just the environment, is kind of hard to set up, especially when you're talking about a design team that might not have that much coding knowledge. So like, if anything goes wrong when you're using this tool, like, I don't know, the packager crashes or something, suddenly you can't just sort of assume that the user of the tool will know what to do.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's been the number one problem that I've seen people have is people that are either web developers or they're new developers and they're coming into native development for the first time through React Native, and they run into these SDK issues or they run into these issues just in general. And it seems so daunting when you look into Xcode for the first time as a web developer and you're trying to debug some error that you feel like you don't want to touch anything because it's going to break everything. And if someone could abstract that away, I guess in an easier way than what's been done so far, that would be a huge win, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think there are a lot of even like easy things that we can do that, okay, maybe aren't going to push the needle, but are pretty helpful. Like, for example, let's say you try to run the packager, but there's a packager running on the same port already. Like 90% of the time, you just want to kill that one. What if we offered to kill it for you? That kind of thing. Or like your packager dies, but you're still trying to edit stuff. We could offer to restart it for you.
Oh, yeah. Totally. I ran into an issue a couple days ago when I was debugging Android. And apparently I'd never run into this, but it's obviously common because I found the answer pretty quickly. So if you're like running Android in the simulator and then you also have the debugger open in Chrome and you make an error in your code, instead of the red screen of death showing up your JavaScript error, it was showing me some other very strange error that I couldn't figure out. And after searching, I had to turn off the JavaScript console debugger, and then you refresh and then the actual error code comes up and then you turn the debugger back on. Stuff like that is pretty frustrating sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That also, and the Watchman stuff, every time I'll set up a new environment, I somehow get bit by having to either reinstall the Watchman thing or clear it or something like that. Super annoying. But yeah, I've got this checklist of like, what are these edge case things? And so, yeah, not necessarily having those, is having to worry about that is huge. You can really just focus on like whatever you're trying to build out, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised if in the future we had a VM or something that you download and just kind of sets everything up for you, and maybe like a simple UI to go along with it, like with a few buttons that just take care of things like restarting the package manager or just making sure that things are running smoothly. Maybe not in the near future, but if you think about it, React Native's only been around for, is it 1 year, 2 years? I mean, imagine what, you know, 5-6 years is going to look like.
Well, if you think about it, Exponent is kind of that already.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They're already making that process so much easier, especially when it comes to deployments and whatever else.
Yeah, I think the only drawback from Exponent is as soon as you start using it, you pretty much locked with their SDK. Based on what they say on their documentation, you can't use any third-party libraries, or you can add a new library. Like, let's say I want to build something in native, then I can't. So that's the, pretty much the only things that keep me off from the library using it. But for to me, for prototyping something very quickly, that would be the number one choice.
You can actually eject from Exponent too. So if it turns out that you do need a module that's not supported, they do have a command that'll eject you from Exponent and just make it a normal React Native app.
Oh, okay. Because I was actually reading the doc and they were saying that we're not actually supporting the third party at the moment. So I never actually thought about this. So thanks. I'll check it out again.
Yeah, I think the command is exp detach. I don't think you can, so you can't use like other native modules that aren't included. What they wanted to do, and I could be wrong, but I remember reading this CLI help like a few days ago for whatever reason and seeing that in there, that detach will let you eject from the Exponent ecosystem and start doing whatever you want.
Okay, that's pretty much that I was actually looking for. Thanks. Since you're actually developing an IDE from scratch, can you tell us about your experience? How did you actually start? Did you actually take a look at different setups, or you just basically start something new? And then how do you deal with the multiple platform? Did you use, what was the
Electron?
Electron, yes. So how do you, because I'm planning to actually use Electron in one of my applications. So can you also talk about that one a little bit? And tell us about whether it's a good idea to use it or just go with the native.
Sure. Yeah, Electron's great. Really don't have anything bad to say about Electron. I think in the earlier days when we started, there weren't as many packages in the ecosystem that help you set up building and signing and that sort of thing. So that part was a bit tricky. But now there are a bunch of things that just make it super easy. Like boilerplates where you really don't have to know anything about how Electron works or is set up. You just sort of get a gulp file or whatever it is. And that has all these tasks broken down that you can use for packaging and signing. And there are packages for, I don't know, putting your whole app as a menu bar tray app. That's pretty cool. Like anything you can imagine, someone's done for Electron now. And the API is just super easy to use.
Do you have your favorite seed project that you can share with us? Because there are jillions of seed projects. And to be honest with you, like one of the things that I like about, as an example, create a React app, it just basically terminates of creating a seed project. So I just basically go and type create a React app, and it just basically builds a React app for me. And I can just basically start writing a, like it comes with the hot reloading and everything by default. So I can just basically start writing code rather than just fighting with Webpack. So I wish somebody actually create something called create Electron app or something. So we can just start building the application like that. Have you seen something like that? Do you plan to write one for us?
Actually, I kind of do, although it probably isn't exactly what you have in mind. So I've been playing with this idea of what if we could get rid of local dependencies altogether. And this isn't quite the same idea, but it's sort of in the same vein. Like we spend so much time fighting with Webpack and Babel and node modules and Yarn and getting all this stuff set up and working together correctly. And it ends up taking just a really long time to get anything started. And I kind of want to figure out how to go back to like, you have one JavaScript file and you want to run it. Can't you just type some command and it'll like kind of figure out what to do automatically? And so I've been working on a generic sandbox for running web environments, but it also would work for React Native, where you don't have any node modules locally. Like Babelifying happens sort of on the fly behind the scenes. Extra node modules are pulled down automatically, or you can specify them in advance, but you basically don't have to take care of any of this stuff. And one of the goals would be that at the end, you can eject if you want, and then you just get a pre-made environment for anything that's sort of like a blessed environment almost. Like it's an environment that maybe you're working on an Electron app if you're using this environment, people will generally know how to answer your questions. And like, if there are libraries that sort of conflict by default, people generally have solved it for this environment.
That would be amazing. Sign me up. I will help you testing it. Like, I'll definitely use this service if it's available right now. But I think everyone, like, as soon as they hear about this one, everyone is going to jump over it because everyone has the same problem. And then, to be honest with you, like, when I do Yarn install and look at the node project, right click on it and just say how big is it, it's around like a gig. And said, wow, okay, I just want to show one text box. Why do I need 1 gigabyte of development environment? And then as you create more projects, you eventually run out of disk space, which is kind of like pretty much happens to me. So I have to go back and then say, remove all the node modules at, recursively inside my project in order to free some space. But yeah, I'll definitely like this project.
To free some space on the hard drive of your computer?
Oh yeah, like I have around like 1,000 projects. Like even if you just type create React app, it just basically creates 200 megabytes something on your drive, like just by showing one rotating React app.
So that must be where all this the space is taken up on my computer these days.
Yeah, you should take a look at that one.
So I know when you guys began building Deco software, we were talking about this last time you on about where we thought React Native was going and why we were all so excited about it. And it's been about a year now since we first had you on. Can you kind of talk about where React Native has gone over the last year and where you see it going over the next couple of years and kind of your opinions about your initial thoughts versus what actually has gone on?
It's been so long, I can't even really remember what I said last time.
Well, I think we were kind of just saying that we all at the time we were thinking that it could possibly be the holy grail that everyone has kind of always been trying to hit as far as building cross-platform mobile apps using a single framework or single code base, or it was the next iteration to that point.
Got it. Well, I think what I've learned thus far is, and this comes from having made a lot of React Native apps, it's actually still pretty difficult to make something that really looks and feels native unless you really know what you're doing and you have a lot of time to spend on it. And I think that's one of the things that we're going to have to overcome before React Native is like the way to build a mobile app. And I think a lot of the like low-level technical problems have already been solved in terms of the React Native architecture and things being capable of running smoothly. But I think there are a bunch of higher level problems, like when I make, for example, I don't know, a button. There is a specific button on iOS, a specific look for my button that I want immediately when I just type button or make a button component. And right now, I'm probably going to get like a colored box with some text in it. But there needs to be a way to like get the native look by default rather than have it be sort of configurable, maybe if you're really good with CS or with styling.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense about the styling part, and also about the building a really high quality app. You do have to spend a lot of time, kind of making sure and spending a lot of time actually tweaking things and making them very performant to make it feel performant. But there's also I would say like 80 or 90% of what I do does work very easily, but there is that 10% or so that I end up having to spend a lot of time getting it to work the way I want it or banging my head against the wall. And it usually comes down to using platform-specific code or using plugins that are not already built into React Native as a framework. Everything I feel like that's built into the framework works really well for me, at least. But, you know, I would say the upgrade process and then using other people's plugins or building native stuff that I'm not very good at building native things because I'm a web developer. Those two things seem to be the biggest problems for me.
Yeah, definitely agree. It's like 90% amazing. Like the app is almost done. And then you run into these things. They're like, okay, on iOS, when you tap a form field, normally your scroll view just sort of scrolls to that form field. And that's what you expect to happen. And on React Native, that's really difficult to emulate. Even using the built-in keyboard avoiding view, you probably are going to have to do a bunch of stuff on top to make it feel even kind of okay. And then what does that do on Android? Well, on Android, the behavior is a little different. And so you're going to have code for both sort of mixed together.
So do you see that these obstacles are kind of overcome in the next months or years? Or do you feel like it's going to kind of be one of those things where we'll always have these issues, and then maybe there will be like another technology that comes out in a few years that kind of is the next step forward in this whole idea?
Well, I think regardless of whatever comes out after, React Native has enough momentum that these problems will be solved. Because I remember when I was making Node.js apps early on, if you wanted to do socket programming in Node.js, it was great. There was nothing like it. It was super easy to use. And then if you wanted to build like a regular website that maybe had a MongoDB somewhere, there wasn't even a driver for Node.js. And you're looking at like the most popular web server plus the most popular database, and somehow they don't connect. And I feel like React Native is kind of in that spot. It's like, if you really know what you're doing and you do the things that React Native does really well, it's by far the best thing out there. But then there's still some places where, like, for regular use cases, no one has made the Express.js. No one has made the instant setup regular thing for you that just makes all of your components look perfect for iOS or whatever it may be.
Yeah, you're totally right. I do see that, like, coming together with, like, Create React App, though. I think once we start putting together, once we start building the building blocks for the building blocks, we'll have like this new like set of building blocks that will make it like so much easier to just pick things off that you want the shelf and just like put them together. Right now with like Express, now it's like broken down to 4 different packages. So if you only want the router or if you only want like certain methods, like you can go and get that stuff. We're not at Express yet. Like we're those like 4 packages that make up Express, you know, if that right now.
Yeah, it feels like there are a bunch of building blocks that will definitely exist, but just they don't right now, and that makes it tough. But we're getting those building blocks one by one. I think navigation, like an official navigation that's sort of been iterated on for like a year, is going to make a huge difference.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think those 4 are navigation, and navigation. So once we get those 4, then we'll, I think we'll be good. So, actually, I'm really excited to hear about all the progress being made on navigation. I think that, all the iterations that have been made, I don't know, it just feels like it's been maybe a year and a half coming on just like what the right way to do navigation is that satisfies all of us that are web devs that come to React Native and, have our worlds kind of blown to, smithereens. It's like, wait a minute, what do you mean push and pop, And so I think a happy medium there is what's needed. So it's good to see that a lot of thought's been put into it.
Yeah, having the official navigation is going to make a huge difference in how easy it is for someone new to React Native to just pick up React Native and make something nice.
Yeah, I agree. And it's been so tough talking to people over the last few months because I've been recommending Navigation Experimental, but in reality, Navigation Experimental is a fantastic idea, but the implementation for someone coming in new is very tough, especially if you're not already familiar with Redux and how Redux and reducers and all of that stuff works. So it was like almost a step back as far as the ease of use. And then the X Navigation API is so nice. It's really, really approachable. I'm really excited to see kind of what's going to come. And maybe they can take this approach in the future about solving other problems, teaming up with other people that are already doing open source stuff and collaborating and stuff like that. It seems like a really cool thing that's going on.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how big a role the community plays in React Native development.
it's been insane how large this community has grown over the past couple of years. There's so many new things coming out now. And I think it's only going, hopefully it doesn't slow us down too much. And hopefully it'll propel us forward.
Yeah, just in the last week, I saw two big companies that announced they were using React Native. So Walmart, you know, they wrote a nice blog post about how they're using it now in production. But Bloomberg apparently released an app last month, I guess during the Christmas mumbo jumbo. It was so busy, I didn't really see any of this information out there. But I saw today where Bloomberg released an app using React Native, and I read their blog post. Seems pretty interesting, and they seem to have had some good, you know, they've really had a good experience with it.
I think we're definitely going to start seeing more companies talking about using React Native, because we know from when we launched Deco, there are a lot of people interested in React Native. And then over the past few months, a lot of people have started building with React Native. And it seems like now a lot of people are about ready to launch their app or big portions of their app in React Native. We just sort of are waiting for maybe one big industry leader to come forward and say, hey guys, we're using React Native in production. It's serving hundreds of million people. It's great. You guys should do it too.
Yeah, I think you're right. So we've already talked about a few things that you guys have going on there. Are there any other projects that you all are working on that you kind of want to talk about?
There's one last little one that I think is worth mentioning. It's more about the API than the implementation, but it's a styling library for React and React Native. One of the things that I almost stumbled upon by accident is, wouldn't it be cool if you could configure styles for a component based on the props? Because right now, you generally use one stylesheet.create sort of statically somewhere in the file, and then you combine styles in your render, at least in React Native, using just sort of the array and passing multiple styles. But wouldn't it be cool if you could say, like, I'm going to define everything style-related in the stylesheet.create, and that's going to let me actually manipulate styles based on props so that my render stays totally clean and doesn't even touch on any of that logic. So, for example, if you wanted to have, I don't know, a button type, then you could switch based on the type and make it different colors or different sizes or whatever. And so I think the first key thing that I wanted from a styling library was just this like prop-based style idea. And so that was what I started with. I made a library that you use something like stylesheet.create, except I did it just as like a decorator. And you pass in a style object or a list of an object of objects. And at any place in that object, you can put a function. And that function will be called with the props as the argument. And so this is great because, one, it lets you like have a bunch of different styles based on the props. And two, you know, chances are you only have like four different states, different types or hover and active or whatever. So you can like memoize each function based on the props. And so it's also very performant because you only end up with like four, I don't know, style sheets that you use over and over, and you're not dynamically making these things in the render.
So you can declare your style sheet outside of the component, but you can still access the props.
That's the idea, yeah.
Awesome. I've always wanted to do that, and I always find myself thinking I can write the props in my style sheet, and then I realize that what I'm doing, yeah, I can't do that. So I end up having to put them in my class. So that sounds awesome.
And it actually solves a bunch of problems. I would say almost more so on web than React Native, because on web, you need to do vendor prefixing. And it'd be nice if you had just like a place where that went, and this takes care of that automatically for like arbitrary dynamic styles, which is great. It would be nice if you could do responsiveness really easily. And so what if there were a totally separate notion of responsiveness that's just a higher order component, or maybe it uses like a provider and connect pattern, But if you hook up a component to be responsive, suddenly it'll have a prop that tells you, like, is it large? Is it, like, what's the screen size? Is it mobile? Is it desktop? And then because it's a prop, you can use that to compute styles. And because they're all memoized, you don't really have any, like, performance impact generally when you compute new styles as the screen size changes.
How do you deal with size? Because in React Native, there is no unit. Kind of like it just basically based on the pixel. And on web, we have a couple of options, like a pixel, PT, a lot of other things. So how do you deal with this? Can I just use the unitless number for the web, or I have to remember that, okay, this is the web, I have to use the, like, have you thought about the unit, or it just, you just basically follow the React Native style? I don't know if that actually makes sense.
I think I get the idea, and I think it is something that I haven't touched on too much, but I basically don't even touch units anywhere. So in my responsive provider, I basically let you determine what responsive means in your app. So you can calculate based on pretty much whatever you want. Like, it could be pixels, it could be window dimensions, as just unitless numbers, be really anything. And you end up returning whatever you want to consider your responsive prop that your components will use. So you sort of get to decide at the top level, like, how you want things to work. And I don't make that choice.
Okay.
Or I guess, I mean, the library doesn't make that choice for you. You pass a function that, like, accepts the possible things that might determine how you want your app to be responsive, and then returns your specific notion of what responsive means.
Okay, I see. Okay.
Well, like a concrete example, on web, I have, like, width, height, but I also have things like is mobile. And you use all these properties, and I just return a string from my calculation function that's like a concatenation of this app is large if it's greater than 1280 pixels, and it's medium if it's greater than 800 pixels, and then it's small otherwise. And then like that's totally arbitrary. I made it up specific to this app, but that's like my notion of responsiveness in this particular app. And so later in my components, I don't have to compare against pixel numbers. I just say, is the screen large? Is the screen medium? Is the screen small? And choose that way.
It actually solves a lot of complex problems that I start seeing, because usually when I'm working with the web, I always scratch my head. Should I start with the pixel? But no, let me just use the other one, because as soon as you start using the pixel, then it becomes a little bit hard to make it responsive later down. So yeah, okay, I see the point.
I think one of the things that you don't really realize also when you're doing responsiveness in CSS is actually how limiting it is, like how you have to figure out how to match these different rules in a clever hierarchy such that you can get the design you want. Whereas if you have the full power of JavaScript, like now, yeah, sometimes I do, like, I make my styles based on the window dimensions, but often in the render function, I'm like, okay, if we're on a large screen, show this component. If we're on a small screen, show this component. And that plays, like, that interplays perfectly with the styles. And so you get, like, any kind of responsiveness. Like, maybe one screen just doesn't make sense in its current format, and you need it to be, like, completely different to do that in JavaScript.
That's really makes sense. Thanks.
Okay, well, I guess we'll go ahead and get to the picks. Peter, do you have any picks?
So my pick for the week is Alan Kay's presentation from 2015 called Power of Simplicity. You could find it on YouTube. I haven't watched it yet, but I'm super excited.
All right. Ali, do you have any picks?
Yes, I do. Recently, I was trying to build a video conferencing app with the mobile. And I wish I could have a WebRTC available. And then I found React Native WebRTC. And it is pretty amazing. It has an example. You can just basically download it and just run it. And then you have full functional video streaming inside React Native. And it just requires a very simple server and then everything becomes available, and then you can actually build it on also on web, and then you can basically amaze your friends or your colleagues that, okay, I built this app. It is pretty amazing. It's available both on Android and iOS, and I definitely encourage people to check it out.
Very cool. Kevin, do you have any picks?
Yeah, I do. Two of them are right out of the React Native Express. I just want to reiterate their awesomeness. So I noticed that Devin has a section about Redux Persist, and I actually use that in my apps. And it's actually, it's one of the best ways that I've found to persist data either to async storage, like on React Native, or on the web, you can use local storage or any of the, I believe it's IndexedDB, whatever the experimental or what are the alternative storage to local storage. But that, and then also I've used Shoutem UI, which he also references in React Native Express. I just found it really helpful to put together a quick prototype to show someone. And I really think that's one of the things I love about React Native is that, you know, I can jump in something like Exponent. So I just like that you can, you know, with something like Shoutem UI, it kind of fits in that, not really cookie cutter, but just it's almost a bootstrap just to get you into the mindset of the app that you're building without having to worry about and make a ton of decisions that you really don't care about. You know, I when I'm building something, I kind of want to just see it a little bit before I start making the buttons, you know, 2 pixels wide and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, just wanted to mention those as picks. And earlier on the episode, Natter, you mentioned running out of disk space with all your node packages and all that. And actually, I want to highlight a package that a friend of mine wrote. It's called Package Link. And what's funny is that it's only a few months old, and it was born out of a conversation that he and I had at Strange Loop this past fall in St. Louis. And he doesn't have young kids, and I do, so he's the one that did all the work. But anyway, it will actually save you a ton of space. And he actually uses hard links to traverse your node directories, your node module directories, and find the common packages, the common versions, and basically perform a hard link. And what's neat is that the operating system takes care of this. So basically, he just does a traversal, and the operating system takes care of it. So there is no, like, what if this fails? Like, what do I do if I delete it from one project or the other? It's a hard link. So the operating system takes care of it. So highly recommend everyone check that out, because in some cases it can recover like 20 gigs on his machine, recovered 20 gigs of disk space that was just hanging out. Wow. In his node modules.
Well, so, what's it called? I mean,
it's called Package Link. And I'll put it in the show notes. I think everyone's going to want to check that out, because we all like, you know, if you've got a MacBook Pro with 256 and you got a few React Native projects, you're close to filling up. So anyway, those are my picks.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Shoutem is really great too. They have so many different components and so many different things that you can use. It's really, really nice looking stuff. And they seem to have been doing a really good job keeping up with it.
Yeah, it's been super easy to work with too. There wasn't anything that I used that I didn't have or that I had any issues with. So highly, highly, highly recommend that if you're just really trying to prototype and you don't want to make many decisions.
So my pick is going to be a book that is out through Manning. It's a Manning Early Access Program book. It's called Machine Learning with TensorFlow. And I think they have about 8 chapters out. And if you're looking to get into TensorFlow, it's probably one of the only books out there that is approachable, at least for me. And it's put together well, and it's being updated fairly consistently. So I would definitely check that out. Devin, do you have any picks?
I have 2 picks. I've been playing with GraphQL a bit recently, finding it super cool. So my first pick is Apollo. Pretty huge library, so I'm sure a lot of people already know about it. But it makes it really easy. Really great documentation, super easy to get started. And then the other thing is graph.cool, which is this parse-like service for setting up a GraphQL backend, and put that together with Apollo, and you can have like an amazing GraphQL backend in no time, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, okay, sweet. Thank you.
Okay, well, Devin, thanks for coming on again.
It was great to be here. It's always fun talking to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We enjoyed having you. Well, that wraps up episode 51 of React Native Radio. We'll see everyone next week.